it was a very different scenario. But in the time of the judges, that's after they'd come off Mount Sinai, they'd walked around the desert, and they'd got into Israel. It said, the last verse in the book says, "In those days there was no king, and I've put all vision in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." And today, why is there so much chaos in the world? Things seem to be going from bad to worse. Are we on a downward spiral? All our preconceived ideas are being challenged, or at least mine are. And there's nothing I can do about it. There's violence on the streets. When I'm trying to sleep, cars drive around and by our house at about 1 o'clock in the morning. Engines roaring, accelerating, backfiring very loudly. They're gone before anybody can see them. And it happens at the most unexpected moment. The police assure us they're doing everything they can, but they themselves are now under scrutiny. It's sad. The floods, the wildfires around the world, global warming, the war in Ukraine, the earthquake in Turkey and Syria. It does feel as if we're in a chaotic, disorder land of a world opposite to the way it should be. But how should it be? Is there an absolute measure for us to live by, which makes life better for everyone? We believe as Christians that there is God's law, which is based on God's character as revealed in Jesus Christ and fulfilled by him. Today is Transfiguration Sunday, when we remember Jesus meeting Moses and Elijah on the mountain as he was preparing himself for death on the cross. Did you know that long before this, Moses met with God together with 70 elders on Mount Sinai, and they ate and drank together? Later, when Moses went up again onto the mountain, I think the others might have come down, and stayed a long time, 40 days in fact, something happened. Have you heard of the golden calf? I'm sure most people have. Those elders and Aaron changed their minds and decided that it was the golden calf that brought them out of slavery in Egypt. You remember the parting of the Red Sea, the introduction of Passover, manna in the desert, water from the rock. They forgot all of that in the space of 40 days. They had even met with God on the mountain and forgot. They worshipped the golden calf. Did those elders, including Aaron, really understand who this God was? Who had they met after they had met, who they had met with, after they met with him and ate and drank with him? I don't think so. There were two revelations from God which were given to Moses after this, giving us a vision into the character of God. One was the law in the form of the Ten Commandments, and the other was a synopsis of God's loving and forgiving character. So what is this vision? What is the character of this God we worship? I was born to love. Those are the songs of a word I recently heard playing. How did the person who composed this song come up with those words? Was it a revelation, or did they just know? Do you feel the same? Do you feel you were born to love? Or perhaps born to be loved? Is it just confined to that moment of falling in love or Valentine's Day? Or is it more than that? Something much more long-lasting and meaningful. I heard someone on the radio yesterday saying that she valued platonic love between friends more than falling in love because there was an understanding that they were in it together. So what does it mean? What is it to be loved? Does anyone want to offer any answers? What it means to be loved or to love? Be accepted, yep. Anyone else? Comfort, yep. I've got a few points here. To feel that the person's on your side, security, either in a friendship or in a family, forgiveness, safety. It's similar to what you said. Another question is, what or who is love? And I think you have the answer up there. Diu kariad iu. God is love, or love is God. Did you know that the first detailed recorded revelation of the character of God was to Moses on Mount Sinai? The people had just sinned by worshipping the golden calf that Aaron had made. While Moses was up on the mountain receiving the Ten Commandments, God said to Moses, "Go down the mountain." And he found them all partying and singing praise in the golden calf. Praise of the golden calf. God was angry and wanted to destroy the people. But Moses interceded with God, and God relented. God is a God we can pray to, and he will answer. He doesn't want to kill or destroy. He's gracious and merciful. Back up on the mountain, God put Moses in the cleft of a rock and then passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of fathers on the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation. This theme of mercy and love of God is often repeated in the Psalms and the prophets, and is even used as a negative argument by Jonah, who didn't want to go to Nineveh because he knew God was merciful and would relent if the people repented, which he did, and so he relented. So Jonah was proved right, but unfortunately he didn't want to do it. This is the God we worship, a loving, forgiving God. And you also have up on the wall in this chapel the development of that theme in 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient, love is kind, and I can't read the rest because I've got my reading glasses on. So who is the God we worship? He wants us to draw near, as on Mount Sinai. Only in holiness, though. He's a devouring fire. He knows we haven't got the stamina to be perfect. He knows that the nature who we are is to sin. But his mercy is never ending. His love is infinite, and his grace can reach the person in the furthest place away. He never gives up, never loses hope, is always ready to forgive. This is the God who sent Jesus into the world, who sent Moses and Elijah to encourage Jesus on the mountain, and he set his face as he set his face towards the suffering before him. Jesus was born to love. All kinds of love come from God, our Creator. We are made in God's image. And the love that we experience is part of our identity as God's children. In and through Jesus, love is revealed in a profound, sacrificial way, especially when he died on the cross. This is the ultimate love, God's love. The fulfillment of the law and the vision which keeps us from perishing. As followers of Jesus, is this love reflected in our lives? As we commit ourselves to serving God in our community, what does this mean? When Jesus came down the mountain of transfiguration from his mountaintop experience with his companions, he was faced with a disappointment. His disciples had failed to help a boy who kept falling into a fire and burning himself. Jesus heals the boy, and exasperation says, "How long must I put up with faithless and unbelieving generation?" Perhaps sometimes we can be tempted to give up. Nobody listens, nobody understands, and we seem to be fighting a losing battle. But Jesus didn't give up. He persevered to the end and got the victory. So any more answers to the question, what does it mean to be loved and to love? Any other suggestions?
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice, yep. And I've got down here, to love is to never give up. Always be ready to forgive. Always be there for the person. To be loved, especially by God, is to know that whatever I do, I will never be left out in the cold. God is near. He is with me. He will never leave me or desert me. As Christians, followers of Jesus, we can expect to be tested to our limits. But God will carry us through if we don't give up. God will make a way where there seems to be no way. Let us put that love into action for each other as we consider our role in the church. And remember, the church exists inside and outside the doors of the building. Jesus was born to love, and I was born to love.